Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Barrel-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Fernanda Anzac, Managing Director, HR Operations for Insperity. And today we are discussing how quiet quitting is adversely affecting DEI policies. Thank you, Fernanda, for being here. I'm really looking forward to this discussion.
Thank you, Tawny. I am excited about it myself.
You know, it's interesting because this idea concept of quiet cutting is something that I think has been around for a while that we have seen companies doing, and whether or not that's intentional or unintentional, and really kind of unintentional as it relates to adverse effects on DEI policies. But for so long, I feel like we've been hearing more about quiet quitting. So when someone sees quiet, they're immediately thinking quiet quitting. Ooh, I know what that is, but not so much quiet cutting. So the first time you and I spoke about this, I was really excited because it wasn't a concept that I had spent much time kind of looking into. And this, our conversations have really forced that upon me. So thank you first for that. You know, I'm sure I'll be thanking you at the end too, but kind of from a beginning point, thank you so much because I learned a lot and I'm really excited for us to share this with our listeners today. So before we get into kind of what everyone's like, Tawny, you're like leading with all of this, but we don't even know what you're talking about yet. But you will. That's a great part. See how I'm building up? I'm building up to when we start really talking about quiet cutting. First though, Fernanda, will you introduce yourself? Tell me a little bit about you and tell our listeners why I've kind of asked you to be here kind of as a speaker on this topic.
Sure. And let me tell you, you are not alone on that quiet quitting and quiet cutting. I often find myself having to explain to people that this is something different. So, hi, everybody. Fernanda Anzac here, as Tawny mentioned. I am a managing director HR operations with Insperity. But prior to that, what have I done and what's my experience? So I'm a true HR professional. I've been in the field for 25 plus years working in all aspects of HR. So if you think HR, I probably have done it. I like to say that I'm really a servant leader and I use HR as my vehicle to help businesses succeed, right? To really talk to those client owners and help them make the best decisions to protect their best asset, which really is their people. So that's really what I do. I've also had the pleasure in the past few years to start focusing on the diversity, equity, inclusion space as well. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about that here in a little while, but also have an opportunity to work with a great team at Insperity that provided services to our clients around DE&I.
I always love it when a guest kind of talks about two things that you covered kind of in that initial introduction. One, kind of how important our employees are to the product and or the service that we provide. You know, I really do think that they're a key ingredient, whether or not you're making widgets or whether or not you are providing a service that's coming directly from those employees. I don't think you can underestimate the importance. And then, you know, the other thing that you mentioned that I really connect with, it is working with organizations as to what their business needs are. I mean, I feel like a lot of companies look at HR as its own little siloed space without understanding kind of specifically why you can't silo HR, the risks that are associated with siloing HR. And then generally kind of how much success can be either created or built when you integrate HR into all the other things that you do. So kind of based off of that experience, tell me a little bit about, for those of our listeners who don't know what Insperity is, kind of give a little background about Insperity itself. It is a larger organization, so I'd be surprised if our listeners are unaware, but for those that are, kind of, what does Insperity do?
Sure. So Insperity is a professional employer organization, so a PEO. So if you've heard that, it's typically a more known acronym. We provide HR services to clients anywhere between 5 to 5,000 employees. We help them with administrative leave, reduced liabilities, benefits, and a myriad of other services. Really, I could spend a whole segment really talking about all the pieces that we do, but ultimately, our mission really describes what we do, which is to help businesses succeed so communities can prosper. And I go back to that businesses succeeding, helping them with their biggest asset, which is their people. Hence why 10 years ago when I joined the organization, it was just a perfect fit for me. I plan to be here until they tell me I can no longer be here, because we really are in the business of investing in people.
And as the managing director of HR operations, tell me a little bit, you know, you talked a little bit about your past experience, kind of what does that look like at Insperity, being the managing director of HR operations?
Sure. So today at Insperity, I have the pleasure of working alongside two really talented groups. One of those is our HR Center of Excellence, and within that group, what we're doing is we're helping clients with their escalated HR needs. So as clients are working with Insperity, they do have dedicated service HR professionals they're working with, and we help with those escalated needs. We help with legislation interpretation, and there's been plenty of that in the past few years. Also employee relations, a talent development, really the myriad of all the things that fall into HR. That's what that group does. And as I mentioned earlier, I also have had the pleasure in the past few years to work with our DE&I services team. So this is a team that provides DE&I strategy support for our clients. So we have clients, various sizes, various industries, and they're coming to us with needing support in this area. And we meet them where they're at and help them through their goal of where they want to be.
No, that's super helpful. And I think leads really nicely into my first question. So everyone's going to laugh because I'm going to say, before we jump into quiet cutting, and they're like, Tawny, stop burying the lead. But I think it's necessary that we really kind of foundationally talk about DEI programs and where they are today. You know, we're recording the show at a time following the Supreme Court's decision in the Harvard-UNC matter. Are you finding that companies are pulling back on DEI programs or kind of moving ahead as planned? You know, I know the decision is not an employment decision, but at the same time, many HR professionals are concerned that it could have a larger implication on DEI programs from an employer perspective.
Sure. So I will start that first by clarifying some language, because this is often where we find ourselves working with our clients as well. So we do talk about DE&I programs, which DE&I policies may fall into there, some training, but then we also really, where we spend most of our time with our clients, is DE&I strategy. So DE&I program versus the DE&I strategy. And the programs, if they're the single events, maybe there's a single event training, or maybe just a celebration of different Heritage Month, whatever that may look like. It may serve a great purpose. It may be very necessary in an organization, but it serves a single purpose typically. Where DE&I strategy, which is where we really, it's our goal to work with our clients on, it's really embedding DE&I into the DNA, the culture of the organization, really making it a part of the larger business goal. And when you do that, that's where we really are able to show our clients the business impact that can make. So programs, you may not see that direct impact, but when you start working at a DE&I strategy, and that takes time, it's not an overnight, but you will start to see that in the business results as well. So I say all that to say, so you've got programs and strategy. And so with the recent Supreme Court decisions, absolutely our clients were asking, oh my gosh, what does this mean? Do we need to freeze what we're doing? Do we stop? What's going on? I don't want to be in trouble, right? I don't want to put myself at risk for trying to do this. And really, we explain to them, and we go into the programs versus the strategy conversation. And because we are mainly working in that strategy space, there's really not a need to slow down. It actually would probably benefit you to keep going, because it's really helping your organization overall. Now, if you have worked with specific programs, whether say it's a recruiting program, probably more aligned with the education decision that was made, where you're trying to set quotas for hiring diverse candidates, those are the things that really applies to, which we really would not recommend in the first place. We really talk about building that diversity, equity, and inclusion culture within your company. So it's a part and embedded in everything that you do. So I'll say all that to say our clients have continued to work with us, and we continue to have new interest in clients that are coming on board asking for support in this area.
For those of you who may just be joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Fernanda Anzac, Managing Director, HR Operations for Insperity. And today we're discussing how quiet cutting is adversely affecting DEI policies. You know, I appreciate a lot kind of the distinction between DEI strategies versus kind of individualized training or events. And I think that those are really important points. One of the other things I hear a lot about is kind of individualizing what this looks like. How do you recommend or how do you assist companies when they're saying, you know, I understand what other companies are doing, but I don't know if that works for us or for what we need? Talk to me a little bit about kind of what Insperity does in those situations.
Absolutely. Those are our favorite clients to work with, let me tell you, Tawny, because that means that you're really open, right? You're saying, I want to do something, but I'm not sure what that is. I've seen what some other folks are doing, but it doesn't maybe match my culture, maybe my resources. And so the way we work with clients, we really talk about meeting them where they're at and really listening. Up front, there's a lot of listening the team is doing. We do provide support in an area of a survey to gather information too. Oftentimes, clients may come already with that data, right? But they may have done a survey or worked with different groups and have that information. So all we're doing is combing through. Because first we want to see what's the need? What's the data showing us? Then we do consultations with our clients just to listen and see what is the ultimate goal? Where is this coming from? Why do we have this need? What have you done in the past? We ask a lot of open-ended questions just to really, really understand and really be a part of that business in that moment to make sure that we are serving them the best way possible. We also have seen tremendous success when there is buy-in and continuous commitment from senior leaders. What are the resources that we have? What time? What kind of level and commitment? So that we can then put the best plan together for that organization. And plans look very different depending on, again, resources, time, commitment, the needs, where somebody is in that journey already. And then we keep working that plan with them, and we are always reassessing. You know, we all know the environment is throwing different things at us, things change. And so how do we need to reassess to make sure we're still aligned and we're not afraid to regroup and change the plans if that's what we need to do?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting too, because as I'm thinking about like data collection and the information one would be looking at as you're kind of considering strategy, this is just an area that is evolving so swiftly. So looking at data from what an organization did 5 years ago, right? I think for some areas of human resources makes sense. That's helpful data, good data points kind of more generally. But in this realm, I think socially as a country, there's been so many changes in the last 5 years. It's likely that your workforce has changed significantly. And even more, I don't know, want to say specifically, but kind of the desires of your workforce have evolved. And that's based off of, I think, not just different generations entering the workforce, but COVID and what industries and how different industries and organizations and areas of the country or the world responded to COVID. Are you finding that kind of how some of these DE&I policies or strategies that you're assisting with, that maybe there are companies you've worked with for an extended period of time that you've seen an evolution in kind of what they need to be doing or what they desire to do over the last couple of years?
Absolutely. That's why we always emphasize the reevaluate from the beginning, because sometimes that has a stigma of meaning something went wrong, we didn't do something right. And the reality is it's not true. You're going to have to reevaluate and pivot, because it is very dependent on your workforce, right? So if you're trying to bring diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging into your workplace, and we are seeing high levels of folks leaving and the new folks being hired, you're seeing folks hire remotely, hybrid, different states, different countries, to your point earlier. So it's continuously changing. So you have to assess that and pivot along those. So absolutely, we're seeing a lot of that going on. But making that a part of the understanding the unwritten contract up front really helps clients and employees to see when, hey, this is different. We weren't doing this before. That transparency of helping them understand this is to meet our needs right now, because what we were doing yesterday doesn't work for today. And so we want to make sure that we're not doing that.
Yeah, no, that reevaluate, that makes a ton of sense. It's time for us to take a really quick break. I mean, I feel like this conversation is just naturally flowing. So there's a part of me that is surprised that we're there, but it is time for a break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's Collision Center.
If your car is a wreck and you don't know where to go,
take it to Moody's.
You want to get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust,
and it won't be a fuss.
Take it to
was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home, sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot, driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe, put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's, take it to Moody's, Collision Centers.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is Fernanda Anzac, Managing Director, HR Operations for Insperity. And today we're discussing how quiet cutting is adversely affecting DEI policies. Nope, folks, you heard me right. I said quiet cutting, not quiet quitting. So before the break, we talked a lot about DEI programs, where we find ourselves now and the work that Insperity does with clients, kind of concerning their DEI strategy, as well as more individualized training and how they can reassess what their needs are and the best way to move forward. But as I said, kind of in the last segment, I'm sure people were surprised that we've gotten this far without talking about quiet cutting yet. But here it is. Here's that moment that I've just been waiting for us to get to. Fernando, what is quiet cutting?
Sure. I feel like before I talk about quiet cutting, I need to put a disclaimer out there that is such no matter when somebody's joining in, that it is a risky practice and not something that I would recommend as an HR professional. So I'll start off with that. But what is quiet cutting? So quiet cutting is a new term, I would say fairly new term. Like you mentioned, quiet quitting has been around, but quiet cutting, we just started hearing about. The practice itself probably has been going on for a little bit here and there. As an HR professional, definitely have seen that in my past 25 plus years. But it is the reassignment. It's when an employer reassigns a work tasks of an employee to a different area, potentially an area where they don't have skills, an area where they have not worked with the past, with little communication, with really the intent and the goal being to make that person unhappy at work and therefore make them quit. And the idea behind it is that if they are quitting, it is less costly to you financially because you're potentially avoiding things such as unemployment or a severance agreement if that may have been owed with terminating an employee. So that's what it is.
Perfect. Well, thank you. And, you know, based off of that description, I will also add a caveat that I don't see this as the best practice for organizations. I definitely see there as being better, more cost-effective ways for us to evolve as an organization. But there could be, I think that some listeners may be saying to themselves, well, wait a second. Is quiet cutting and quiet quitting, do we really get to the same point kind of generally? Are they different terms, but with the same ultimate endpoint? I mean, what are your thoughts as to that, Fernanda?
Sure. So yeah, definitely two similar terms. I would say different endings. You know, the quiet quitting, when I thought about that, and that started probably around 2020, 2021, I want to say, I think of that as a disengaged employee, right? So it's an employee that's showing up to work, doing the bare minimum, collecting a paycheck and going home. They're not going above and beyond. They're not in the culture. They're not adding any other value, just meeting the bare minimal expectations, collecting that paycheck and going home. And when we talk about cutting, it's really about an employer decision, whether that's based on a financial decision, whether that's based on employee performance, but it's really the employer making that decision that they don't need that employee. And then how do they go about in that exit strategy?
Yeah, it's interesting because when you were talking about it, in my mind, that distinction between autonomy, kind of the employer decision versus the employee decision. And I feel like so often when you and I are guiding kind of the clients that we're working with, one of the things that we're saying or often repeating is, hey, make sure that you're giving your employees some autonomy, that they feel engaged in the process, whether or not that is that they get to make their own choices or they get a say in what choice ultimately occurs. And it's interesting here because, you know, if we look at the two terms, quiet quitting and quiet cutting, the thing that they are at dichotomous is kind of this autonomy. In one situation, we're giving employees absolutely no say. We're saying, hey, here's new job responsibilities, here's new obligations, here's new standards. We don't really care if, you know, you don't have the skill set to do this job, versus the quiet quitting where it's the employee themselves who's saying like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that, or nah, I don't, you know, this isn't something that has value to me kind of in my job. So it's interesting because the more I really sat and thought about those two terms, I don't want to say laugh, but while they sound so similar, they're kind of at these opposite ends, other than saying like, hey, it's done quietly. No one's screaming it from the top of the mountain. They are very different terms. So I don't see people getting the two terms mixed up, but I think a lot of people may just be not focusing in on this concept as much as maybe quiet quitting, because we've been talking about quiet quitting so much, and there's just this presumption that they're the same topics.
Agreed. I think that several conversations I've had recently, as I've started to learn more about the terminology of quiet cutting, automatically everybody goes to quiet quitting and going through that. But when you break it down, they really are, to your point, at opposite ends, an employee versus an employer decision.
Now, I'm going to start with a caveat that both you and I are on the same page, that we don't agree that this is the best choice kind of for an organization to make. But at the same time, I'm of the mindset that I very rarely tell people what they have to do. I like to provide options. People can't see Fernanda shaking her head in agreement with me. We are both on the same page there, which is good. But at the same time, part of the show is educational. So why would an organization potentially choose the format of quiet cutting versus simply laying someone off, in your opinion?
Yeah, so the reasons that we hear really are tied financial most of the times, right? So the unemployment comes in, right? So if they quit, I don't have to pay that unemployment. And then the topic of severance too, right? So maybe they're owed severance. The reality is not every employee is owed severance when they're terminated. And oftentimes it's maybe happening because of lack of knowledge. And to your point, I like to just talk about all the options and what's on the table and then allow that client to make that decision. But yeah, severance is not always owed to an employee. Maybe there's an employee agreement that says something that states that, but maybe not. I would say these are the types of decisions that you need support. What I find oftentimes, if an owner or client or a CEO is getting to this place, sometimes it's because they just have not been able to look outside of the immediate situation they're in, right? They're in some sort of trouble, whether it's financial, whether it's performance related for employees, but it's really hard to see one foot ahead of the other. And maybe the easiest way to do this is just to move that person aside, move them out of the way, let them quit and move on. And that may appear to be the case, but the reality is, we talked about, is probably way more risk and a huge impact to your culture. I mean, putting somebody into a position where they'll be miserable, it doesn't help your company grow, and it drives good employees away.
And that's really helpful because I think it leads into my next question. I mean, we've now talked about where DEI policies are right now and strategies and kind of what that looks like. We've identified and talked some about what quiet cutting is. Let's do a hypothetical. You know, I do hypotheticals a lot in my job, but an organization comes to you indicating that they believe they need to restructure. How would you work with them to better understand that the effect that a restructure could have on their DEI strategy or policy specifically?
Sure. So as in that situation, we would work with the client to first really understand the why. And I can go back to the what is going on. What's the area impact? What's the business impact? We go back to D&I as part of your business strategy. It's embedded in everything that you do, which means if you are coming to a place where you're having to make a decision for lay off multiple employees, if you already have that culture of diversity, of equity, of inclusion, of belonging, as you are looking at who are those people that need to be impacted, you're in a much better place than if you were not looking at that before, right? Because you're probably a diverse, equitable, inclusive organization already, just needed to make a business decision at that point. Now, of course, we always cross our T's and dot our I's and look at all of those pieces. But I would say our clients that have been using a D&I strategy, have been a part of working with our teams, tend to be in a better place when that comes into play.
So when an organization decides, hey, we need to restructure, what are some questions that you think the organization or maybe whoever is in charge of either reassignment of positions or job elimination, kind of what are some of the questions that the individual making those decisions should be asking themselves with a DEI focus? Kind of, are they two separate dialogues? Is it like, what are operational needs? And then how does that impact DEI? Or is there a way that you can integrate those dialogues to make sure that you're focusing in on both the operational needs, but then also how to decrease adverse effects on, I'm going to say inclusion kind of more generally?
Sure. Yeah. So I do think it is one conversation up front, but there does come a time once a decision has been made, right? So that decisional unit of who is this going to impact? So up front, we talk about, hey, let's not talk about people. Let's talk about what's going on in the organization. Is there a specific area of impact of the business, right? So is it that you lost a specific account? So is it everybody that's grouped in that account? Is it you lost an entire product and so there's different pieces on it? Or maybe it's a marketing piece. You lost a bid that you thought you were going to get. So we first talk about the business need and what does that look like and the impact. Then when you start to look at that and you make that business decision of, I really need to have a, 10% cut on my workforce, and you start looking at who's working in those areas, what does that look like? You start to put those names down and look at it. At that point, you are looking, again, after the fact, you're looking to make sure that it doesn't tell a story that you don't want it to tell, right? You want to make sure that it doesn't end up that because you no longer need the marketing because you lost on your marketing contract, but your marketing is an organization where you tend to have your newest generation of employees working, all of a sudden you're terminating or laying off all in one generation. Those are conversations we'll talk about if the data says that. But I go back to my last point to say that we find that once you do see that you have worked a D&I strategy to your group, most of the times when you get down to that place, it's a pretty diverse group because of the way you've been working strategy.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, the data tells a story, and kind of understanding what that story is, I think, is really important. And checking in, what's that storyline kind of initially, how does it compare to what our needs are operationally, are really good and important steps that an organization should have at front of mind kind of during the course of this whole process. Simultaneously, I mean, so let's say that the organization does all the things that you've now recommended, and we ultimately are going to have, you know, reassignments, and that might not be with the goal of quiet cutting. You know, you and I have discussed, not ideal, but let's say that the organization kind of moves it in that fashion. Have you seen any increase in claims of constructive discharge kind of as a result of what could be termed or labeled quiet cutting?
Sure. So I'm not an attorney myself, so it's exact number of cases is not maybe something that I'm looking at every day. However, I can definitely see the trends and what is coming in, at least as complaints. And what I would say is that overall in the past few years since the pandemic, we have seen increases in charges for people that are feeling like they've been treated differently or they've been retaliated against. And I would dare to say with my HR expertise that nobody is coming and saying, I have a charge against you because you quite cutted me, right? That's not a thing. So I have a charge against you because you treated me differently because I'm insert a protected class there, right, from Title VII. So really there is an increase in retaliation cases as well. So potentially the folks that you're cutting, maybe if especially if this is done around an error, it's avoiding dealing with someone's performance. Typically, the person that's not performing is also the one that's speaking up about what's not going well. So now you're quiet cutting the employee that was also complaining about whatever was going on in the organization. And now that can become a retaliation claim. So lots of risk. Again, I know we mentioned it a few times, but lots of risk in this area and an opportunity for employees to fill in the blank because employers have not given them all of the information.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think so often you have a supervisor who doesn't want to deal head on with a performance concern, and they might see this as a good way to accomplish what they need to accomplish without having to head on deal with it. And I think that it just creates so many additional issues kind of in the long run. So, you know, really, really good points there that I appreciate. It is time for another break, however. So you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, Paper Trails and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetti.
And I'm Pete McVetti from McVetti's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Fernanda Anzac, Managing Director, HR Operations for Insperity. And today we're discussing how quiet cutting is adversely affecting DEI policies. We had a really great conversation before the break, Fernanda, about kind of quiet cutting, not something you or I agree with as a kind of best practices, and also different things that employers should be considering when they are both looking at individuals who they might be looking to place into different positions, and then how that could, I mean, proactively, it could be positive for a DEI strategy. I mean, here you and I are focusing in on negatives in large part. Big part of our job is dealing with kind of more negative ramifications, but there potentially could be positive. What are some key elements, however, that you think are important in any communication strategy involving a restructuring that, even though not intended to be a form of quiet cutting, could be viewed by someone as quiet cutting just because it is a restructure?
Sure, that's a great question. And to your point, I think the reassignment of employees in order to avoid having to do a layoff is great. And it's very positive. It's something we're looking forward to speaking to our clients about and finding those solutions. Those are the wins. But that does come with good and transparent communication. So I think key points that I always emphasize is timely and phased communication. When I talk about timely, is people need time to process, right? So you want to make sure that you've got a good plan. The phase, I often see that employers will go out with a message to their whole organization, including their managers, their frontline supervisors, and their employees at the same time. I really discourage that. I encourage for employers to first take that phase approach. The first wave is being transparent and sharing that communication with any frontline manager, supervisor, or leader that you may have. Give them the time to process the information, give them time to ask questions, and to get to a place where they feel confident in being able to lead people. Because guess what? When you announce it to everybody, the first place they're going to go to is their supervisor, their manager, and you want that those people to be aligned with the message from the company. So second phase could be your employees, and then at that point, your managers are prepared to handle, and they've had time to process it too, right? That initial shock usually comes with some sort of emotional response, and if your supervisors and managers can, in that moment when your employees are getting it, be calm, cool, and collected and ready to answer questions, that's going to leave your employees feeling like they're working in an organization that has got it together, right? They know what's going on. I feel like we're going to be able to get through whatever this is. Outside of that, I would say transparency. Oftentimes clients say, oh, I can't tell them everything. This is, you know, business organizations. I'm not saying say everything, but be as transparent as you can around the why. Why did we get here? Around what's next. One of the things that we saw often during COVID times, there was so much uncertainty, and employers were trying to provide certainty. So they would say, hey, we're going to do a temporary leave, but it's only going to be 6 months. We'll have you back. And then 6 months would come, and 7 months. Oh, it's another month. And then 8 months, because it was uncertain. It was an uncertain time. We did not know what was next. And really the success was with those employers that were able to say, hey, we're planning to do a temporary leave. We are not sure where we're going to be. Our goal is to do this for 6 months. What I can promise you, they're going to reevaluate every month. We're going to keep communicating with you until we're ready to do something different. Again, more transparency, more buy-in, more loyalty, and more commitment from your employees when it comes to a time such as layoffs, restructuring, those types of things.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I think the organizations who really have led with empathy, kind of with that understanding that COVID, you know, had a, it was personal to each person what their experiences were during that period of time. Uncertainty is definitely, I think, a really important way to describe it. And then from an employment perspective, you know, understanding, hey, what are we looking at here? Are we going to see an organization that is not going to be operational in a year or 2 years? Is this a phased layoff? Should I be readying my resume? I mean, anyone who has worked in management for any period of time has likely had an employee come to them and said, should I be preparing, you know, my resume? Because there is uncertainty, but for organizations that are leading with empathy, I think they are able to kind of decrease some of that fear. And you might be thinking to yourself, okay, Tani, you keep just repeating empathy, empathy, empathy. But when we're talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion, inclusion and empathy, in my mind, go hand in hand. So that when we see organizations that maybe are able to achieve, I don't want to say a diversity goal, but who are diverse, but who are not leading with empathy, there's just no inclusion. It doesn't remain a diverse organization because people are coming and going so fast because there isn't leaders who are leading with empathy and understanding kind of the needs that are central to, I don't want to say most, you know, DEI policies, but most successful organizations, honestly, more generally. That's just, I mean, there wasn't a question there, Fernanda, so I apologize. But kind of as we've been talking about all of this, those are some of the concepts that are going through my mind. I mean, do you think there's a way to do this without empathy and still kind of be a, I don't want to say a successful organization, but achieve the desired results?
You know, I think long term, that's hard to do. I think that empathy is really connecting with people in what I've seen a change in HR and in companies overall is since the pandemic is that people are a whole and they want to be treated as a whole, right? You don't get to just go to work and do your work first and you go home and you're, you know, really we're one holistic individual and we come to work. And if our employers aren't in tune and empathetic and aware of what's going on and helping us succeed as individuals, I don't think you're going to end up with that long-term inclusion as you meant. And then which would mean more turnover and people feeling less connected, right? When you talked about the quiet quitting, right? People, I think that's part of the reason. If you don't feel like you really belong, you don't feel like anybody truly invested in you or understands you or what you're going through, you're less likely to give that extra 10%, 20% or whatever that looks like. Or to be understood that there may be a week or maybe a month that I am really just giving bare minimal, but that's okay. I'm still performing, but I've got all these other things going on. But I know that I'll be able to come back and do those things. So absolutely, I think empathy is a big piece of, and a different piece for folks, for managers and supervisors to lead with that they maybe didn't have to as much before.
So while you and I are kind of on the same page as to, hey, quiet cutting is not ideal, we both recognize that there's going to be reorganizations that are necessary in companies. And earlier, kind of in the show, you mentioned that some organizations may be choosing kind of this quiet cutting path, either to decrease severance that they may either be required to provide under contract or may feel obligated to provide. It also, and I hadn't really thought about it from this perspective, but it's a really good point that it decreases unemployment. Claims that are going to be paid out as well, so that, you know, whether or not you're self-employed for unemployment or depending on your state, kind of all kinds of different things that are happening there. Are you finding at all, though, that some of this realignment or the movement of peoples is based off of just a lack of skill set, that there are positions that they can't find sufficient workforce for? And the goal becomes, hey, I know I already have some high worth kind of employees. If I move them to this position and retrain them? Like, is that achieved? And, you know, I say that even though earlier we talked about autonomy and involving someone in the process, but are you seeing kind of more of a necessitated skill building for those moves, or is really a lot more of it financial based?
No, like I said, the term itself is very new. So we don't see as much people referring to that, or we're not saying, hey, this is quiet cutting and you shouldn't be doing this. But I think it's case by case. However, I do feel like there is a quicker shift. People need to be more agile. Companies need to be much more agile than they have in the past. And that's sometimes a skill set. And especially when you're talking about a smaller organization, less amount of employees, you need folks to be able to do different things. I think to me, the key to success is the how you go about that. So if you have a highly qualified, great cultural fit employee, and you have another area in your company that maybe is struggling and you feel, gosh, I could see them having the skill sets to get in there. All they need to do is learn XYZ. Again, it's the how, right? It's that transparent communication up front. It's also the support as they transition. If you just drop them into that role and you don't provide training or support, words of encouragement, anything, then that's different than really helping somebody be successful and expand their skill set. You know, you're only going to be stronger as an employee if you have different skill sets. So if your employer can invest that in you, then that's great. And you should look at that as a win, as long as they're giving you, again, the tools and the resources to be successful.
No, I think those are all really, really good points. Well, we're going to take a break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Car is a wreck and you don't know where to go.
Take it to Moody's.
You want to get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust
and it won't be a fuss.
Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
M-O-O-D-Y.
Your kid was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home, sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot, driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe, put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HRPowerHour.
To protect her home and family in a disaster, Karen was willing to wade through water, mud, and insurance paperwork.
Yeah, I can do this.
You go, Karen! By simply understanding and updating what her insurance covers and doesn't cover now, she'll be better prepared no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast.
contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is Fernanda Anzek, Managing Director, HR Operations for Insperity. And today we've been discussing how quiet cutting is adversely affecting DEI policies. The good news is that neither of us think that quiet cutting is best practices for any organization. But we have to be realists. I mean, you and I deal in HR day in and day out. And there are going to be moments in time operationally where an organization realizes that it has to evolve and change. And that may involve changes in HR in order to be successful. When an organization finds themselves in that situation, what are the top two things that you would recommend from a human resources perspective that either managers or owners, CEOs, keep it top of mind?
Sure, that's a great question. I would say first and foremost, what comes to mind is picking a partner. Don't do this alone. If you are in that, you know, gray space where things aren't going right, you've been trying to figure it out. Usually this has been happening for a little bit, right? It's not an overnight. You're in a space where maybe your mind is not thinking clearly. So I say take partners, HR partners, legal partners, whomever they may be. Make sure that you're taking partners too that are challenging you and really opening up your mind to think differently in different times. And maybe you're not afraid to voice that unpopular opinion to help you get out of that headspace, get out of that gray is what I call, right? And really be able to think critically about your business entirely. And the second place I would say, you know, again, it's partnership, because I think when you're in that moment, that's really is outside of an HR or a legal partner, find a community, whether they're other business owners, if you're business owners, managers, CFOs, whatever that is, find a community, somebody that is in a similar role, but maybe not in the same organization. But that can give you a different perspective as well, because sometimes that's what you need in that moment is different perspective.
No, I absolutely agree. Those are really, really good points. And I think something that in every big decision that, you know, big and small decision, honestly, at this point that an organization is making, that those are really key elements. It's surprisingly, I know people are like, holy cow, that went fast. I mean, to me, I really enjoyed this conversation so much, Fernanda. So I appreciate all the time that you've spent with me today, kind of talking about this really interesting topic. So thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show, for having, you know, a really open discussion about quiet cutting, even though it's something you and I agree kind of not in any organization's best interest, but definitely happening. And really understanding kind of what it looks like and how we can continue to protect DEI policies from adverse effects from it. So thank you so much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.